hunting for that magical genie with piles of cash? Join Candace and her guests as they uncover financial secrets, have a laugh at past mistakes, and savor financial rebounds. Thank you for listening. Let's dive in and do something today that your future self will thank you for.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Money Flow Genie podcast. I'm very excited to have John Wells here. He is a coach. He's going to explain a little bit more of what he does. But John, it's a pleasure to have you here. I've loved the conversations we've had outside the podcast. I hope it's just as full of enrichment as it has been.
Yeah, wonderful. My name is John Wells, and I've been in Colorado most of my career. I started with A Better Way Realty, and for 25 years, I've been selling and coaching people through investment properties, single family homes, small rental properties, and things like that. And then just gradually started to gravitate towards bigger deals and syndication type deals. And so then I created a company called A Better Way Investments. And that is designed to help people through the process of, making big investment decisions. And I'm vetting partnerships and different vehicles to create better returns. So I'm doing it for myself, but also, for clients that are looking for some guidance.
And these would be people that would be looking to possibly invest in a deal that maybe you have to offer, or is it just anyone that has a deal, they want to talk to someone else outside around it?
Yeah, it's kind of morphing into, guidance into bigger, better, faster returns. It's just a money return thing. And so it started in single family homes when equity was going through the roof. So it was the right time. So in 2010, my clients and I were jumping into single family homes. And, those have now 3, 4, or even 5x'd in value. And so all the equity is there, but they're not getting the dollar for dollar return. The return on equity is super small because there's so much equity in these buildings. You can't charge enough rent. You'd have to charge $10,000 a month in rent to realize that equity. So we're going to transition out of single family homes into syndications and commercial stuff. That's the ultimate goal.
Nice. Now, before we get into a dive into that, I have a part of my podcast that's called the Self-Praise Showcase. And that is for you to boast about yourself, and myself and the listeners to hold that for you, so that anything, whether it's big, small, doesn't have to do anything with money, anything that you're proud of yourself for, that you just feel like it is something that you really want to honor yourself for.
I'm in this because I'm a people person. And I think if I was to look at specifics of what got me here and why I'm here and why I'm continuing, to build something, it's not just for me. I want to be the guinea pig and, test trial my own finances in a sense, because it's a big transition going from, single family homes or group homes into syndications, because there's this massive trust gap, an error gap that you can fall into. And so I'm investigating, I'm diving as deeply as I can, finding my mentors and really learning how to trust someone else, and that's this layered idea that I've got brewing now that you've got me on this podcast. So overnight I came up with what my win is, and it's because of this network that I'm building that I'm gaining confidence in this process of transitioning from one very familiar investment into a world of unfamiliarity. But I need to do it confidently. And as I grow myself and as my portfolio grows, I can then give other people advice on how to do that for themselves.
That's fantastic. It's not easy stepping into the unknown, even though it's a very similar transaction going from the single family world into the larger unit world. There are lots of moving parts and they're different players. So it's like stepping into, it reminds me of going from one, when you're in school and you go from, say, middle school and that anxiety, and now I'm going to high school.
Right. Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's overwhelming and it's exciting. But you just have to, I think one of my favorite things I've been doing, there's a guy, Paul Sheely with Mind Tracks, and he's literally a hypnotist. And he walks you through what your body goes through and what your physiology occurs with your physiology as you go into new environments. Your body does this thing, and eventually you just have to look at what it's doing and saying, okay, well, it served me then, it served me, and how do I use my physiology, this anxiety or this adrenaline rush that you have when you're trying to gain something new, and start to apply it, and then you're learning how to express yourself and share yourself. It's a lot. And so, but he talks about the whole physiology that's behind putting yourself out there. And I think that's something that's really hard to do, because not everybody is an extrovert. Not everybody's ready to get out there and shake hands with the world. That's a challenge for me. I don't know why it's a challenge for me, because I love people, but it's still a challenge because you have to know who you are inside and out. You have to be comfortable with yourself. This probably starts there.
So when you talk about identifying the feelings, can you tell us a little bit more about the are so let's say we're approaching something like this, like for yourself, are you identifying, okay, this my body is producing this chemical that normally the fight or flight part of my brain says run, but I know
Right.
that I are you coaching yourself, talking to yourself, moving yourself through? Because everybody goes through this, whether it's through a real estate transaction move or business, new job. Tell us a little bit more about that process for you.
I think what you're asking is how I'm approaching putting myself out there and being more comfortable with it. And it's a tough process. Literally, just being on a call with you gives me anxiety, and it doesn't make a lot of sense because I like you and I think we've got a connection. And at the same time, I think I'm put on the spot to, explain, not just explain who I am, but explain why I'm here. And it's just a process that I'm not used to doing. And so, I'm used to giving technical advice or looking at something and saying, this is what I suggest, or breaking it down into the numbers. But yeah, putting yourself out there just makes me feel a bit exposed, and it creates anxiety, but it's a good anxiety. It's pushing myself to a limit, that I just haven't been used to. So I'm sure I'll get used to it eventually, but it's still kind of hard. So
I
I don't
know.
like having eyes on me. I think I've had that my whole life. I don't like it when people look at me, or the attention is uncomfortable. So
You're not alone in that. I'll tell you that right now. I love doing what I do. I love presenting everything that I've learned, whether it's a good experience or a bad experience. But people are judgmental, and we all are. And if someone says they're not judgmental, I really you take a deep dive. We're human. That's what we're meant to do. We judge everything around us in order to know what it is we're supposed to do. Do we, even if you think back, in the earlier days when all it was about foraging, you're judging, is this a safe environment to go out and pick those berries on the ground? What's the weather like? It's like lots of things. So when I hear people saying, oh, I'm not judgmental, it's like you are, but maybe not in the sense of the way that we use that word. I'm recently learning
right.
the subtleties of language and the nuances. Sometimes I don't pick them up as quickly as the average person would. So I have to really like pause for a second there and think about the multiple definitions of the complex English language.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Even your description with being judgmental, you are describing more of a process that I would go through, or that somebody might go through, just as basic analysis. And so, in your view, judgmental, or being judgmental, is analyzing, the environment. For example, for me, judgmental is whether I'm going to accept this person or whether I'm not going to accept this person into my anything circle, outer circle, inner circle, of my circle at all. And that's, I think, unfortunate with society today, because people are very judgmental, and it starts on the top, highest level. And then it's hard to relate to people that are that judgmental or whatever. And when you're trying to make business decisions, we teach people, that green is your favorite color, and it's the color of money that we're all after, and we're all entrepreneurs trying to figure out how we're gonna survive and, put it all together. And, without, mentors, and what I thought about last night is mentors are everything. And if you don't have one, you need to find one and learn to build a relationship with them. And if I'm not calling my mentors or the people that I trust, once a week, I really need to up my game because I'm not growing that part of the onion or whatever that I really need to grow. So I'm super excited to get this idea kind of written, and maybe we can meet again, when it's more formalized. But right now it's just sort of a layered onion, and you're in the middle, and the most outer layer is the most thin with no real depth to it. And as you go deeper and deeper, you're going to make these really interpersonal decisions, financially, emotionally, relationship decisions or whatever. And until you're on that most deep level, and you look around on that deepest level, you don't know if this is the right decision or not until you're super, deep into it. And hopefully, you've got really tr a good family and a good mentorship, level to refer to. And so you get these ideas that are just noise and they're shiny objects. And how do you deal with all those things? Because they're going to be really attractive. They're going to be amazingly attractive with all kinds of bells and whistles on them. And you're supposed to decipher, okay, this is nice and it's attractive, but is it logical? Does it fit my realm? Does it match up with what I think is right, financially or emotionally or whatever? And so I think just getting a structure to that, it's making me very excited that I can maybe put some structure to it and feel more objective when I'm, meeting people and interact with new people, hearing their ideas and things. I think it'll be good for myself, but hopefully for other people.
I think it would be extremely helpful for others. Thinking about the whole concept of the onion. Yeah, so there when I'm listening to you speak, I'm thinking, the outside layer of the onion that you're describing as a metaphor is that's all the data. Data is data. I mean, you can manipulate data, but that's what we're basing our decisions upon.
Right.
But human beings base decisions upon with emotion. And not just data. They do data as well, but predominantly emotion. And when you think about the onion, the deeper you go into an onion, the sprout comes from the dead center of it. So
Yeah.
it's removing all that exterior, those exterior layers that we don't really we need, but we need to then focus in on the biggest thing, I think, and I've done a whole podcast about this, is that financial freedom means what? It means something different to every single person. Every single person.
Right.
The one common theme that I found, it's really about time freedom. And that still can be accomplished even if you're working a W-2. It's just about changing the structure of the day, priorities, all sorts of things. But I love the concept of thinking about you investigating this further because we're not given much guidance. We're told these are the numbers. Go for the deal. This is what you need to do. Yay, yay,
Right.
yay. Go,
Yeah.
go,
And then
go.
it's like, oh, wow, how did we get here? This is no.
Yeah.
This is not what I thought was, happening. And how do you, then what do you do? You can't just like put it in reverse and back out of a, long-term commitment.
Yeah.
You're stuck. And, I mean, that's scary. I've heard a number of stories like that.
And there are a lot of people that have, I've learned over the course of the years that I've been in the multifamily world is that I'm still wondering, like, how do you vet? I know that there are people that I am in deals with that I would do another deal with them, whether the deal would go south or not, just because they are good people. They do the best
Yeah.
thing that they can do. They're knowledgeable and they're transparent. And money does not equal this is a good person to be in business with.
Well, and that's really part of, what I've been trying to accomplish myself is finding these people that you completely are on the same, moral scale with. And so, yeah, you might find a bad deal, but if you found a great partner, you're still ahead,
Yes.
in the grand scheme of things.
Yes.
So I think that's great. Maybe you could talk about that a little bit more because I'm interested in that idea. of how to find people that you not just relate to, but you kind of feel on a same, I don't know, same level, same scale, same, tangent, that you say, okay, I could continue working with this person, come hell and high water, I would want them on my side, so that kind of
Well,
thing.
I can tell you just from my own personal experience, one is just really engaging with people on a regular basis, like, having weekly meetings if it's someone that you're going to be in a partnership. Because week after week, if you're analyzing deals and nothing is happening, you talk about the frustrations, you talk about you give each other support, like, no, it didn't pencil again. All this work, and oh, I forgot to do this, even though you've been doing the same thing over and over again. You can skip a step ahead and forget to do, like, oh, if I'd only gone back in and looked at the taxes, we'd have known right up front this deal never would have worked. Those silly things, because you can get distracted easily. But the biggest thing that I have found from my own personal experience and finding people is, one, longevity and communication. Not just a week or two. We're talking to somebody for years. Because within a year, look, the statistics say that even in an intimate relationship, you really don't know someone for 2 years. About that, it takes that amount of time to really understand who someone is, probably because it takes about that much time to have various different experiences, good, bad, ugly, everything. Within that 2 year period, you get to see someone for their authentic self. But the biggest thing for me is that when something, even if something's not going wrong, but something could be, we could make a decision here and it could be an iffy one that could go really south, or it could be a really good one, but it's a hard decision. If you have a partner that's wanting to back off and change the subject, or say, we'll worry about that when we get there. Now, and I just want to preface that, not make up scenarios of problems to solve that aren't happening, but we're talking about really what would we do if we had a situation with a deal where it was going south, and the rent in the area, we can't increase, various scenarios. How will we talk to our investors? If they want to walk away from that conversation, you don't want to be doing any kind of business with them whatsoever.
Yeah, they just want to put their head in the sand and, wait till the weather changes or something like that. But yeah, that's the whole thing. There's got to be a way to kind of have some test trials or some mock, investments, to say, hey, let's do a mock investment over the next 6 months. We actually mock, the entire thing. And you come up with these different scenarios of it goes this direction or it goes that direction. And what are we going to do? I mean, it would take a long time, but I think you could learn a lot about someone, under kind of a hypothetical scenario like that. So,
One of
yeah,
the
I
things
mean,
that I also learned, John, is that I don't know if you've ever taken any of these, like a DISC test or I think it's called Genius U or something like that. It basically, you learn your personality and what your skill set is. That is imperative to really understand who you are. Let me give you an example. I'm a creator with an engineering mind. So I have the engineering mind to learn the way things work, but as a creator, I can see the big picture, and I don't necessarily, I mean, I do follow the detail to get there, but I don't have that engineering mind exclusive focus for detail. So to have two creators together, we would butt heads. But to have someone that's extremely analytical and likes to line things up in order, perfect companion for me, because I can say, hey, what do you think about this? And then they can set up, okay, A, B, C, D, E, F, G. And then I would, then I'm like, do it. And then I'm off to the next.
Well, then
That's
you got,
like an
yeah, you found your
example.
who. Yeah, you found your who. So, yeah, I think that's a lot what we're talking about is building a team or building the trust to be able to have a team or at least find team members that you've somehow been able to put through a questionnaire, so that you can find out whether the DISC profile actually matches with your personality. But yeah, it's fun to network. And I think that's this process that I'm excited about diving into is, as I meet people, if I can get this process down, I could literally put them into different categories, without being offensive. Even if I said, hey, you're on, a layer four or a five because we just met, but I can, without saying it to them, I'm going to put them, I try to get them onto an inner layer so that I continue to grow with that person. Or, leave them out there, or, peel that layer and just move on, because you're going to find people that don't fit at all. And, I haven't been able to come up with a real objective way of categorizing people, because it's just like all the information out there. Everything has relevance, but how much relevance do you give it, and how much emphasis are you going to, allow it to have on your life and on your decisions? Only a few people should have that much of an influence. And so yeah, I'm really super excited that you got me on here, because it just got me thinking, well, what is it that I have accomplished so far? And I have this massive network of people that I know, that I trust, that I care about, and I feel that it's the same, and it has been very transactional, and it's never really been, I mean, it's certainly more than just business, but I've never pushed it, and I've never, told this handful of people that I know, hey, I'm doing this, why don't we consider doing something together? Or if I was to do something, would you join me, kind of thing. So I'm excited about syndication, but it's a different approach. It's not a product. It's a process, and it's this process that we're kind of diving into, that it's exciting to put, some structure to, because it's so random, and what I realized this morning, or early, late last night, is if you're on the outer layer, and I have to throw, some of these, mentorships out there that are paid mentorships, those are pretty far out there in the layer, and a lot of people are just reading that book like the Bible. And while they're literally quoting the Bible during their process, you're just sitting there going, well, I think the Bible's great, but, I don't, thumb through it. It's not like I live by the Bible, and these people live by the Bible, and it's like, wow, that's deep, but I don't even know. I can't relate, because I wasn't raised with it. And so when you're not raised with it, you don't live by the Bible. Even if you believe that it's a great tool or a great mechanism, people, take it so literally too sometimes.
And
And
I
I, it
think
kind of th
do
it
that
kind
in
of throws my
general.
whole thought process off.
People do that in general. Who was it? Oh my gosh, I wish I could remember. I was listening to a podcast the other day, and they were talking about individual focus. Oh no, I know it wasn't a podcast. How ironic is this? So I have a parrot, and this is the first time I've ever had a parrot. And often I've already had the parrot on my podcast because I thought it was going to be making a lot of noise, but it really doesn't. But
That's
it's also
awesome.
about living your dream now with what you have. And I've wanted to do falconry. So let's bring this back around to the
Oh,
topic of what we're talking about. So the woman, there's a program that a membership that I'm a part of that talks about it. She teaches all about falconry, parrots, these larger birds, and what it's like. And it's really quite a meditative process because the birds are, you can't make the bird do anything. You can only give it choices that you would like it to do. And hopefully it will choose one of those choices that is the outcome of which you would like them to have to do. Like I'm
interesting.
teaching this bird who has not had much physical contact. I want to teach this bird how to sit on my shoulder, but she does not trust yet. So I have to build trust in various different forms. And
Sure.
so, in doing so, this woman had talked about focus. We have false preconceived teachings that this is what it's supposed to be. And that we live our lives by that based upon our environments in which we grew up. So it kind of, I was thinking about that and I was like, wow, I can be very rigid in lots of things. And it's because it's familiar. I know it works. And that's the way that I grew up. But is it the only way? No.
Right.
And when you start interacting with people, particularly in the level in which you are, I think that could also be a challenge to see, I need to look at this in a curiosity way, as opposed to being, black and white. It's this and. There's not always one way to make a particular meal. Think about if you just take one vegetable and you could make an assortment of meals, but out of one vegetable. And if you've only grown up and you've only made this, you just steamed them or you just boiled them and that was it, your life can be very limited. So it's an interesting
And that's
concept.
what, and that's what getting to know, people and their ideas and their culture, and, I think that in my next phase in life, once I'm able to reallocate, what I've been building for 20 years, that's now a little bit top heavy. I would describe my portfolio as very top heavy, lots of equity, but not enough income to really support it. My next, stage in life will allow me to go and see other cultures because there's just so much out there that we don't know, and we're sitting here, kind of working to the bone, for 20, 30, 40 years. And we might have something to show for it somewhere. If you pull back enough layers, you'll see, okay, this is what I have. This is what I've created for myself and my family. But what did I really gain? What personally did I really grow? Where did I grow through all this work and through this incredibly difficult process of having to re-engineer and recreate myself every single year because something changed in my industry? Or there's new technology that I have to incorporate into my business. Or there's a lawsuit that makes all realtors look like criminals, multi-billion dollars of lawsuits that we have to tr somehow overcome. And we didn't put ourselves there. The consumers put us there. And yet they still come running back to us when they need answers. So I think it's kind of funny. I have noticed when things get weird economically, there's certain classifications, and I would say that this last kind of witch hunt, if you want to call it a witch hunt, has been realtors. Realtors really got the shaft out of this last shift in the economy. And I don't know why, but they were the scapegoats, and I'm one of them. And I don't like the way that feels, and it's made me shift my whole thinking about, well, I'm a realtor, but people don't really like us, and I don't want to be in an industry where I'm not really liked. So I appreciate realtors more than anything. I started in the mid-90s, getting my license and meeting, these brokers that were way smarter than I was and incredible business people. And I have such great respect for them. And for 40 years, they haven't changed their tune. They're just doing the same thing, providing good service, being very thorough with their process and breaking it down and being very clear. You can't get more transparent than what a realtor, in my view, is trying to provide their client. And this process that that the realtors have gone through, it literally put billions and billions and billions of dollars of pressure on the industry to say, we can't be transparent anymore. We were being transparent before. I just don't get it. To me, it's unfortunate, but I don't hold it against anybody. I could say, anybody can complain, about a commission, but nobody knows what they're making anymore. And we can't advertise it anymore. And I think it's a shame because to me, that's transparency. It's like one side of the street, you have unleaded gasoline for $3.50. The other side of the street, you have gasoline for $3.49. But in real estate, you don't know what you're paying. Because it's all variable now. It's the weirdest environment that we've created. And it's fine. And I'm okay. It's just given us another layer of confusion to try to work through with the customer. And we're no longer focused on them. We're focused on us. We're focused on, where did it put us as a group of people? And I think it's sad. The National Association of Realtors, at the time that they lost a $50 billion lawsuit, they were only worth $5 billion. So they're just trying to bankrupt that whole piece of the equation. To me, it's sad. But it, and I've shifted my mental state, because it's not just like that I don't want to be liked, or that I want to be liked, or I need to be liked and looked at in a positive realm, but who wants to have that as an uphill battle to start a conversation? So I'm excited to dive into ownership, deeper into ownership. And I've always known that, you're going to be able to build and scale and grow generational wealth longer term with ownership. But then you have that whole animal of responsibility and vetting and decision making, and how do you get there? How do you get to the finish line without, looking like you just went through a tornado? Because that's what it is. It's a tornado of information you have to try to bring into, a digestible event to say, I've made good choices and now I can live with my choices, and hopefully they're the right choices. Because in the end, you don't know how it's going to turn out until the money's in the bank.
Right. We're speculating, and when larger deals like this, it's a speculation, predictions based upon past market conditions, past rent, all of these past costs of items, past labor costs, then you put inflation upon it, and and realistically, it's a guessing game. The biggest responsibility, and going back to and showing that as an example, going right back to realtors, it is the individual's responsibility to do their own due diligence. You cannot just walk in and blank and just like close your eyes and point and say, that's it. And then scream, how could this happen to me? Well, I can tell you why, because you closed your eyes and you pointed and you said that one. People don't like to take responsibility. They really don't. They love to take responsibility when things are going really well. But if something is going wrong, nobody likes to go, oh man, that was not a smart move. No one likes to be humbled in that way. So we have to
People like to be
remain
right too
teachable.
often.
Yes,
Being
and
right is so important to people.
it
It just
is.
blows me away, and
And I can
it's
get
very
caught up in that.
distracting.
Yes. I
Well,
was taught a while
people want to
back. I was taught a
go
while
for.
back, John, and I'll stop talking over you. I'm sorry.
Oh no, you're good.
But I was taught a while back that to ask myself when I find myself struggling to be right, do I want to be right or do I want to be free? And
That's a great question.
if I'm getting so pent up about something that I want to be right about, freedom really rings true. That what the desire is, and I'll just back down. It doesn't mean I'll be a doormat, but I will not continue. Is it worth my time? What will being right bring me? What will it?
Right. Well, it's funny that you bring up the freedom aspect, because because I've been given this luxury of being able to spend a lot of time thinking about what does freedom really mean, to me. And you have to have this base layer of survival money, and then you could start there and start to build out this idea of what freedom really is in your own world, and how that affects the people around you. And it's just the process of getting that base layer completed. Because if you're in the real estate market and you have a variable rate mortgage, for example, my entire portfolio is, fluctuating right now, where my cash flows are great today, and by this time next year, my cash flows could get cut in half just because my loans are going to adjust, And it puts a lot of pressure on the vehicle, this thing that I've built over a long, long period of time, because nobody saw interest rates, going up for 18 months in a row. And now here we are. And I thought I made an okay decision to get a half a point better in interest rate to take a variable rate mortgage. But now I'm here going, wow, I wish I would have chosen the 30-year, because I could cruise along, for a lot longer and not put pressure on myself. But that pressure is also, should be really welcome, because not just from meeting people like you, it's from getting the concept of this new idea where I can take my 4 or 5% return on equity and turn into 15+% returns. And some of those are cash flows, some of those are monthly, income scenarios. If you search hard enough, you'll find income funds that will replace your income. You just have to keep digging.
Yeah.
Yeah, so to me, the whole freedom aspect of what you're saying is, yeah, to keep reminding yourself that this is what I'm trying to accomplish and trying to get out of my own way so that I can listen to somebody else that might have a better point of view or a better perspective or a better tool or a better, due diligence process than what I'm using right now, so that I can stay out of trouble. 'Cause I think that's the whole challenge right now is, how do I stay out of trouble when I've given myself so much freedom?
Listening to you talk about the scenario of rate, we're all taught to be consumers and we've all been taught to chase the rate. And what we're supposed to be chasing is flexibility. And what does that mean? So, for instance, a really simple example that most people can probably identify with, a lot of times banks will say, oh, let's do a 15-year mortgage because then you'll pay your mortgage off. And your rate might be this. But if you look at a comparison between the two, which one has the most flexibility in the mortgage payment? Usually the 30 year, yes, if you take it for the full 30 years, you will be paying more interest. But
Sure.
you have flexibility at any point where there's a no prepay, there's no prepayment penalty that you can add and basically pay your 30-year mortgage off in 15 years if you choose to do that. But also,
Right.
you have that flexibility that if you had chosen that 15-year mortgage, that is a fixed payment that is much higher than it is the one that for 30 years. And so, when I say focus on flexibility, focus on where the minimum payment is and make a structured plan. Okay, I'm going to go for the 30 year. I want to pay it off in 50 years. How am I going to make that happen? Make that plan and stick to it. But we're usually
Right.
not disciplined enough to
Right.
look at the long term like that. We'll
Yeah.
see rate and 15 years, take it, and it sets us up for failure.
Yeah. What I think also we're kind of talking about is, we're, through meeting people and listening to what other people are doing, is we're putting discipline and structure into areas that we really didn't realize needed structure and
Yeah.
discipline. And everybody talks about it and their schedule and the 5 o'clock crew or whatever they're called in the morning, and I'm like, okay, I don't know if I'll do that one, but I get it. I see where you're going with this. And it does build a mental capacity to where you can say, I've got a good base, I'm ready to go explore, and I'm ready to take on the world kind of a mentality. And without that, you're probably never going to even get to the door. So it starts kind of here, meeting people, reading the books, learning the structure, and learning these mantras or whatever that you create so that you can get through the day, and at the end of the day feel like you actually accomplished something. Because otherwise you could sit there and flip through the channels, on Netflix all day long and feel like crap when you wake up in the morning, because what did you do? So I haven't gotten rid of the Netflix and the Prime, but it's sort of like my reward for doing good things and following through with the structure of the day that I've created and the challenging structure that I've created. So yeah, you kind of have to reward yourself along the way.
You have to. That's why I have the self-praise showcase. You can only compare yourself to yourself because, particularly if you look at social media, oh my gosh, you could feel like a failure even though you've built an empire. And in fact, that I've actually spoken with people, not I don't think on this podcast, but on just in any of the mentorship groups that I've been in that talk about people that they coach that are billionaires and feel like failures.
Right.
And one thing that I know for my business, my landscaping business that I've had for 33 years, is that I work for some really wealthy people and everybody has a budget. The budget means they might have more zeros behind theirs, but everybody has some type of budget that they live under, even
Right.
the super wealthy. And it was a big aha moment for me when I had a client. He chose not to put in a hundred and this was years ago, $150 tree, which was like a penny to him, but he had other things that he wanted that 150 to go towards in his garden. And I
Interesting.
had that aha moment, like, wait, everyone has a budget. It doesn't matter how much money you make. And you
Right.
better have a budget, and you better learn how to manage money if you want to have it. Because when you get it, you'll lose it if you don't learn how to manage it. And so that all of that kind of inspired me to start this podcast, to have these depth enriched conversations, to think about. I don't want to. I'm not a big vacation person, but there are people that plan their vacations and put more time in planning that 2 weeks out of a year instead of planning what they're going to do for the rest of their lives.
Yeah, that's a little topsy-turvy, not quite balanced. But yeah, you said something there that kind of hit home with me. I like to look at things, sort of. I love listening to people's point of view, and then I like to look at the cathartic version, I think, the opposite of what they're saying. And for example, that person that didn't want to spend the $150, they felt like they could have a better use for it. There's a certain aspect of that person and of that mentality that I've been allergic to, and that micro thinking has been it's stifling for a lot of people, and they've somehow allowed that to give them this structure, and that's fine in their world, but in my world that is limiting. And it to me it gets rid of the macro, the big picture. And when I lost a fortune within the last 24 months because of a scam, I was proud of myself in the end for taking a risk. And I don't ever want to ever learn a lesson like that ever again. But I know that most of the people that I would classify as, mentors or family, they probably couldn't have digested what I had to go through. And so I'm having a bit of a hard time finding, people that I can actually talk to, with what had occurred. And I'm still okay with it. And I'm, it's not like some big gut punch. I mean, it was definitely a gut punch, but it's not like one of those things that I'm just going to beat myself up over day in and day out. It was a daily thing that I had to wake up to for a year, about a year and a half. And I had to, take big breaths and just realize it's over. It was probably a 6 to 8 month process of losing an entire portfolio that I had built of stocks and crypto and stuff like that. But in the end, I felt like I actually patted myself on the back, and I would never give advice the way that I was had processed this individual, to take their advice and treat them like a mentor and learn from them as if they were teaching me something valuable, because I believed them. And I can't beat myself up for believing somebody. I can't beat myself up for trusting somebody, but I can learn from that and put them through a process that will never allow that to happen ever again. And so, yeah, that was something that is going to be really interesting to come out, whether it's in a book or, more interviews or whatever. But I mean, I literally lost a fortune in my view. I mean, I've listened to some other people, also in the crypto world, where, they had rug pulls and, lost so much money. But in my view, it was a fortune. In a lot of people's view, it's a fortune. But for wealthy people, it's a bad day in the market or whatever.
But it's your money, so it's your perspective, and so it's your experience. I love
Yeah.
the fact that you allowed yourself to grieve, but you pulled yourself out of that. You didn't ride the victim wave. It's an unfortunate thing to watch people go through experiences. We all make mistakes in our lives, no matter what they are. It's what we do with those mistakes and that information. How do we apply it? How do we grow from it? How do we move forward is really what makes that journey valuable. You can find value in anything. I've met I know people that have had some horrific physical things happen to them, and they've taken those opportunities. They see that as if this did not happen, I would not be where I am today. And it gave them fuel to be really huge spiritual leaders in the world. There's so much that we can take from negativity. I actually started this podcast just to share the trying to come up with an instantaneous overnight court decision of almost 15K a year on child support. How, what, where's that going to come from? That's how this podcast, I thought about it for a year before I actually did it, because as I got through that journey and ended that term with a basically with the child support custody agreement, it has allowed me to grow and see money in a whole and the financial world in a whole different way. That if I would just remained in my small little world, I would never would have been opened up to any of the opportunities in the world that I am right now. But it
That's
wasn't
awesome.
easy in the moment. It was not easy in the moment. And I have specific podcasts that share about specific things to help those that are in that particular space, that it's excruciating to know information. If you don't know what the right smart question to ask is, people won't give it to you. So every time I learn something new that's a smarter question to ask in a specific situation, I like to put that on this podcast because you don't know until you know. And sometimes you don't
Right.
until it's too late. And I've been through quite a few of those.
Yeah. Well, it's the whole documentation. I also recall, even as a even as a teenager graduating high school, that I felt for some reason that I was going to lose track of all the lessons that I had learned up to that point. And at the moment, I started writing a lot of poetry. When I was 18, it was like what I did. And it was all about the feelings that I was going through and the fears of the future that I felt and the doubts that I had of my abilities to actually do something with myself. And, sort of started there. But what you're describing to me is a process of being able to document these answers as they hit you, and as you go. And you're creating, maybe it's a legacy, maybe it's just a guide, that you can fall back onto to help you through other decisions, that are going to be difficult or other ways of creating means to an end. And, I just can't say enough about where I'm at because I completely relate to what you just said as far as meeting people that have already been there or they've already created this stream of income that was able was to help you get over this hurdle that you had. And everybody has those hurdles. It doesn't matter if it's a health insurance policy that you can't afford or whether it's a car payment that you can't afford or a mortgage that you can't afford. There are answers out there if you find the right people that will guide you. And I'm lucky that I've been able to kind of be a guide to people. And it's fun when you hear, friends and family talk about conversations that they've had with, within your network. You have a shared network. And my sister was telling me on a walk that we had yesterday, she was talking to her high school friend who's 2 years older than me. And she's like, yeah, he's in real estate now. I was like, yeah, I kind of remember talking to him about real estate before he was in real estate. And then she's like, yeah, and then there's this other guy. He was in your class and he's a realtor and he's like the big top dog with Keller Williams. And she's like, and I go, I talked to him about real estate too. So I have influence, and I feel good that I have influence. And I feel really grateful that I can, impact anybody, that is willing to listen to a concept, that we may have in common or share or that we can build together. But I think what you said is if somebody out there has done it, and if you have access to finding them, those people, you need to put yourself out there. Otherwise you're going backwards. You're stagnant,
John, this has been fabulous. We've run out of time. How can our listeners get in touch with you?
Phone and email is easy. Phone is 720-271-2778, and email is John, JON, at abetterwayrealty.com.
Awesome. I'll have all this in the show notes for individuals that aren't able to jot that down. And is there any parting words that you would like to say to the listeners before we head out?
It's really just about being gracious to you and allowing me on your show and to be able to share any kind of words of wisdom. I feel like I'm growing and I'm humble in that. And if I can affect and help people along the way, it's just as rewarding to me as it is to them. Oftentimes I don't know the rewards until years and years later when they call and they say, hey, that house that you sold me 15 years ago has quadrupled in value. And I don't even think about it until I hear from them. I'm one of those people that I kind of wait and I got to get out of the waiting mode. I need to start reaching out to people because I think I continue the trend of having a positive influence. And so that would be my parting word would be put yourself out there and don't cut yourself short and give yourself credit where you need to give yourself credit. Otherwise, you're not going to realize what you have to offer.
Oh my gosh, that's fantastic, Joan. Thank you so much. Well, we've
It
run
was
out of
great.
time. Thank
Enjoyed
you so
chatting
much
with
for
you.
being on. Ah,
My pleasure.
really great. I love it. Very deep conversation. I love it. I hope our listeners
Yeah.
got a lot out of it. And thank everyone else for being on the podcast and listening out. And remember, you are your own genie in a bottle. Please do something else today that your future self will thank you for. And thank you all for listening. And we'll see you next time.
Thanks, Candice. It was great chatting with you.
Thank you.
The info in this podcast is straight from our personal experiences. You alone possess the power to manifest your desires. You are the genie in the bottle, awaiting your command. So ask smart questions. We're not licensed financial pros, so be sure to consult with a licensed professional, attorney, or tax consultant.